whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Receiver set. First and 10 from the Chicago 40. Off the play fake. Catch is made by the tight end Kittle. Inside the 20, the 15, and finally taken down inside the 10-yard line of the Bears.
Now, back to
Dillard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
All of a sudden, the Niners look like the Niners for 1 week. So, where's it been? Where's it going next? Too little, too late? All fair questions. Willard and Dibbs, glad you're with us. We'll get back to your calls shortly. We'll let you hear what Kyle Shanahan said about Debo's social media posts. But let's hop in with our good friend Mark Schlereth, who joins us every couple of weeks. River Island's guest line, Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. Hey, Mark, what's going on?
How you guys doing, man? Great to talk to you.
We're fantastic. We're remembering the last time you were on, the Niners were about to play the Bills, and you were kind of thinking that, boy, this is, we're going to see what the Niners are made of. This is make or break, and obviously they were awful. So what did that make you think about the Niners?
Made me think that they're done. Like, stick a fork in them. They're like, you know, I mean, they're still, what, two games out behind Seattle right now? Game out behind, I think they're tied with Arizona, game out behind the L.A. Rams. The L.A. Rams in that division control their own destiny, and we saw what they did to the Buffalo Bills. Unbelievable performance by the two wide receivers in Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford. So I still think the same thing. I think they've dug themselves too big of a hole. They have not been able to compete offensively. They have not looked the same that they normally look, you know, and have not created the explosive plays that we're used to watching them, you know, create. And I think right now it feels to me to be a little too late.
So the win over the Bears didn't do a whole lot for you?
Oh, no, it was great. I mean, it did. It, like, you watch it and you're like, oh, there's the Niners. Where's that team been all season? Like, where's that offense been all season? So, yeah, it didn't make me feel like all of a sudden, oh, they got a chance. I just think they've dug themselves too deep a hole.
And so you look at a Ram game coming up on Thursday, and, you know, you may have Nick Bosa coming back, and Trent Williams we don't yet know to be certain, but you look at this matchup with a Ram team that has Nacua this time, and Cooper Kupp maybe is going to go. Is it one of these games where the 49ers are playing well enough to maybe win this, or are the Rams just too hot right now?
No, I don't think the Rams are too hot. The Niners, they played like they did against Chicago. I think they can beat just about anybody. That's a big if, and, you know, it's really interesting. One of the things that the Rams have done, you know, we talk about Kupp being back, we talk about Puka Nacua being back, we talk about all that stuff, but one of the things the Rams made a conscious effort in is they were like, hey, man, we have, you know, we've neglected our offensive line, we have not run the ball very well. Sean McVay, anytime you talk to him, he'll always talk about the illusion of complexity. Hey, man, we're going to show you a lot of formations, we're going to motion, we're going to do a lot of things that you know, like Kyle Shanahan does. They work together, right? But really, what we're a downhill run team. We want to run the football. That's what we want to do. So that's what I expect from them. I expect them to run the ball well. And those two wide receivers block like they're tight ends or offensive guards. I mean, those two guys are pretty incredible. So the one thing that they have done, because San Francisco had their way with the Rams for a while, and they made the games tighter a year ago. And the one thing the Rams have done, they've been like, hey, man, we can't beat San Francisco if we can't match them, at least close to match them physicality-wise. And so that's a change they've made. That's a conscious decision that they've made.
Mark Schlereth with us on Willard and Dibbs. Stank, I wonder if you could, you know, you probably played at a time where you didn't need to worry so much about people tweeting after games or whatever. But like, how would you feel if you won a football game and then the next day a teammate – is on Twitter saying I'm doing fine, I'm just not getting the ball? How would you react to that as a teammate?
It'd irritate me and it pissed me off. By the way, you lead the team in drops. So, Mister, I'm getting along fine. Like the thing I Debo is a phenomenal football player. Phenomenal football player. And you became who you are because of your versatility. Because they could line you up in the backfield. I truly believe that Debo Samuel could line up in the backfield and rush for 1,200 yards as a running back. So they ran you at the running back position. They used you in the jet sweeps, the orbit sweeps. They used you in the screen game, the bubble screen game, the rip and tear screen game. They used you, you know, in a myriad of different ways, the deep overs and everything else. You're built like a fullback. Like, you're an incredible football player, and your versatility has made you a superstar and got you paid millions upon millions of dollars. But that's not good enough, right? Because, what, I'm not being paid as much as Brandon Ayuk, or I want to be an X receiver, I want to be something I'm not. I want to be a real boy. You know, I mean, at some point, accept who the hell you are and be grateful for what they've done in creating a superstar. I don't understand, like, why it's not good enough to be who you are. And what they've done for you is created a, you know, generational wealth. And like, you've worked hard. I get it. I mean, you're a great player. But you're not Justin Jefferson running the X, you know. You're not that guy. So I don't understand where the disconnect comes from. I don't understand the disappointment. I don't understand. And it always comes from the wide receiver position. Like, at what point did we make these guys so valuable? They're so self-consumed, because it's always one of these guys, it feels like. I mean, in Philadelphia, it's A.J. Brown. Like, at what point did we overvalue them to the point where they feel like they're above the team? I don't understand. You should make him line up one-on-one and play guard for a whole practice and get a mouthful of Rydell every play and start to understand what other guys have to do for you to even sniff a football. Because it bothers me. And that's one of the things about Kyle Shanahan that I know this to be true, understanding other people's issues and problems. Like, he is so big on that from a coaching standpoint, coach to coach, player to player. You need to understand what other guys have to go through, that other guys have to sacrifice so that you can have some success. And then we're going to pout because we got three balls thrown to us. We only had two receptions for 22 yards. We've got, what, one TD on the season? So now we're in pouting mode, right? And not that we won a game, that we handled them offensively and being excited for George Kittle and the day he had, and like, we can't be excited. We got to pout about the lack of production we had. And that amount of selfishness, honestly, it just irritates the piss out of me.
No doubt, especially when you contrast it with Juwan Jennings' stink and you see the way he's going out there and playing and making plays. Does that give you a little bit of a lift seeing a player like Juwan who's kind of embodying exactly what you're talking about?
Absolutely. And let me just be clear, man. I'm a huge Debo fan. Like, what that guy has been able to do throughout his career and the thing, like, for the playing the running back spot and all the different things he's done, I think it's incredible. And I think it's just one of the cool things that I've ever got to watch. And it just is bothersome, I guess. And Juwan Jennings, man, that dude, I called a game last year in San Francisco against, I think, Seattle. And that dude is like, they got to rip that guy off of people. He's trying to kill people. And I love it. Like, you know, he's just a football player. And they developed so many of those guys in San Francisco. And I don't know what the disconnect is, but, you know, I said this a couple weeks ago on television, man, he just seems disgruntled. He just seems like it's not the same. And, you know, we made light of, oh, you know, the Pepper Tabor stuff, you know, and the choking people and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is something hasn't been right. Something hasn't been right within that locker room or with him. And I think, you know, I think that tweet, you can dismiss it or you can say whatever you want about it. But ultimately, you know, that's one of those things that doesn't lie. That's one of those, that's like, you know, things that, you know, I always joke around, things that don't lie. The running game, you know, small children, drunk people, and yoga pants. Yoga pants don't lie. So, I mean, all those things don't lie. And that's what he was feeling at that particular point in time. You could take it down, but the damage is done.
Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. And we are talking with Stink, Mark Schlereth, right here on Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game. So, listen, Stink, we could look at the records, and I get all that, but you watch a lot of ball. Seahawks, Cardinals, Rams, Niners. When you just watch those teams, who do you think's the best team?
I think it comes down to the Rams and the Niners. And obviously Seattle's winning right now, and they're making some plays, and Big Cat Leonard Williams is probably playing the best football of his career. But I honestly think the two best teams, when I watch those teams, the deficiencies up front for Seattle are alarming. You know, they're winning in spite of their lack of being able to block and do things. So that's an alarming watch for me. But the two teams that I look at and think those two teams can play are the Rams and San Francisco.
And you mentioned that the run game, one of the things that doesn't lie, along with young children and yoga pants, which is, I'm going to be stealing that, by the way, absolute.
It's going to be the name of my fantasy team next year.
Yoga pants don't lie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty good, but anyway. You look at the Niners on the ground.
And by the way, yoga pants, a privilege, not a right.
a lot of this is getting written down, by the way, Stink. You're in your bag today. The ground game, McCaffrey out and Mason out, Garendo maybe out. Can the Niners still do it as they're down now to their fifth-string running back?
Yeah, isn't it incredible?
Right.
It goes like father like son, man. It was just like we would one guy roll out, another guy roll in, one guy roll out, another guy roll in. You know, I remember a streak there. We had TD for 2,000 yards, and TD gets hurt in 1999, and Olandis Gary comes in and runs for 1,200 yards. And then in week one the next year, week two the next year, Orlandis Gary goes out, and Mike Anderson comes in and runs for 1,400 yards. And it's like it was just a factory. So do I think they'll be able to run it? Yeah, you know, I mean, ultimately, everybody goes, well, it's just the system. It's the system, this, that, and the other. And that's, you know, that has a lot to do with it. It's a lot of the coaching. I watch more film than I probably should. But, man, there's so much good coaching. Bobby Turner is an amazing coach. And he does a great job of helping those guys understand what the scheme is, where the weakness of the scheme is, the likelihood of being able to press, whether you're going to have to cut back, where the weak link is, where the strong point of the defense is, like all those things. And you can see those guys understanding that, setting their blocks up, cutting accordingly, you know, I mean, all those things. And you know, one of the things that Mike Tomlin once told me, and I loved it, and I stole it, that you guys are going to steal my stuff,
yep,
is that, like, not every run needs to be, not every run needs to be a buffet. Sometimes you just need to have an appetizer. And so many backs try to make every run a buffet, every run a breakout. And what ends up happening, instead of getting a nasty three and a half that keeps you on schedule, you get a one or a zero or a minus one because you're trying to be a star. And that system is not coached that way. Bobby Turner does not coach it that way. Bobby Turner, if you take a four-yard gain and make it a one-yard gain because you're going to spill it outside and try to, you know, outrun the defense, outflank the defense, your ass is going to be on the bench. And so it's coached that way, and I just think those guys are exceptional coaches that really understand the running game, the strengths, the weaknesses. So every guy is coached exceptionally well, and that's why every guy, to me, you know, has success, you know, and I always say, hey, the year that Mike Anderson had 1,400 yards, TD would have had 2,100, you know, I mean, because he's that good and he makes up for a multitude of sins, but still, you can have a lot of success regardless of the guy's your starter or your fourth or fifth string.
Mark, you're so good on breaking down the offense, but I do want to ask you about the 49er defense. Their new defensive coordinator, Nick Sorensen, has not really made himself popular with the fans so far. And Jordan Love and Josh Allen ran all over them without Nick Bosa. But then suddenly, they hold the Bears to 2 yards at the first half. Did they figure something out, or were they just playing the Bears?
Yeah, I think probably a little bit of both. Listen, man, it's hard when it's not just one coordinator, right? It is how many different coordinators have they had year after year? It was Wilkes. Who was before that? There have been multiple guys, and so you've heard multiple voices, multiple nuance, multiple changes across the board, and every guy wants it done a little bit differently. And so, you know, I have this kind of 10,000-hour rule, and I always think about it the way that I approach the game. Man, I've run this particular play 10,000 times. You've defended it 200 times. You know, it's the global gym effect. I'm better than you, and I know it. And so let's run this play that I'm really good at, and there's not a defense you could line up in. There's not a look that you can give me that I haven't repped 100,000 times. And so ultimately, when you go through defense coordinator after defensive coordinator, from Sala to whoever else was next to, it was D'Amico from
yeah.
Sala to D'Amico Ryans to Wilkes to, you know, to Sorensen. Like, that is hard because every little piece changes. Every little nuance changes. And it sounds like a small deal, but it's a big deal. And continuity is important. And then you're hearing a different voice. And then you're saying, like, you don't have success with it one time. You're like, well, shoot, when we did it with so-and-so, we had a lot of success, and I was doing it differently. I was playing this style a little bit differently. I was playing this technique a little bit differently. I was playing this leverage a little bit differently. And the way it was explained to me before made sense, but the way this guy's explaining it doesn't mean it's wrong. It just doesn't make sense. And so, like, those are hard things. Those are hard things. And, like, I even look at Seattle. Like, Seattle, we talk about your division. Seattle came in. They were awful early defensively. They actually dumped two of their starting linebackers and picked guys up off the street. And they're playing a lot better. But they've played the system for a while, and then they got a couple guys that fit better to that system. So part of great coaching is fitting your system to the guys' eyes and what they see and how they play. And so all that stuff takes time. And unfortunately, when you start a season, that's one thing you don't have. You can't say, hey, let's roll into this for 9 weeks and figure it out. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, you can't make up continuity, and you can't make up the experience that you have with a coordinator who's been there and a team that's been there as well. I want to ask you, Mark, about philosophically what the Niners do, because they don't blitz very often, yet they don't seem to play a lot of press man coverage. How important is it for a defense to marry what you do with the front four with how you cover on the back end?
Everybody, like every defensive coordinator I talk to when I sit down with them, they always talk about marrying the pass rush, you know, with coverage. And like all those things are incredibly important. And, you know, talking about nuance and how this stuff works, I was having a conversation with Eric Mangini today. We were just talking football. And I was like, you know, one of the things that I always thought of as a player is on this particular play, like, I want to know the global perspective of what we're doing. I want to know what my tight end is doing. I want to know what my fullback is doing. I want to know what my halfback is doing. I want to know the releases. I want to know the depth of the routes. I want to know how many hitches the quarterback has. I want to know what the timing of the route combination, when the ball is out. I want to know all that stuff, right? So I can adjust to accordingly. And then I want to know, like, hey, where's the quarterback set up? On play pass, where is he set up? On three-step draws. Like, does he drift in the pocket based upon what we're throwing? Like, all these different things are important to me, because the first thing I thought to myself as a player is, like, I'm walking up to the huddle, and I go, where can I not get beat? That's my first, like, my first thought is, where can I not get beat? Where do I have help? Where do I have leverage? Where do I have, you know, a fullback or a tailback releasing through the B gap? How can I funnel a guy to where, you know, where there's traffic, and that traffic will help the foot traffic of a back or a tight end or whatever is going to help me block the guy. So those are the things that you think about. And when you haven't been coached, you know, and you don't have that continuity, guess what's lost? That nuance. And the difference between being good and being average is nuance. This whole game is nuance. And there's so many little tricks and there's so many little things that take you from good to great and great to exceptional. And when you don't have a lot of time on task, it's really hard because you know how you learn? Like getting your ass kicked. That's how you learn. You know, I always joke around, you can't upkick a four-eye. And for those who don't know what a four-eye is a defensive end that's lined up on the inside shade of an offensive tackle. And an upkick is a short set where you actually fake run. Well, you know how I learned you don't upkick the four-eye? Because when you upkick a four-eye, it turns your body and it gives you a soft edge on the outside, a soft edge on the inside. You know how I learned that? By upkicking a four-eye on a three-step drop and get my ass kicked and giving up a sack. That's how I learned it, right? And I was like, oh, shoot, you know? So we had, like, my production crew, we have a joke. Like, when somebody says something and maybe it doesn't make sense or something says that or something that didn't go right, we always say, we look at each other and go, guy upkicked a four-eye. Yeah. What a moron.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, Stink. So even if they go 7-7 and win this game Thursday, you still think they're dust, huh?
I do, unfortunately. But, hey, listen, man, I'm the biggest Niner fan because I'm a huge Kyle Shanahan fan. And you know, Mike Shanahan is a dear friend and a mentor of mine. So I'm always rooting for the Niners. But I just think they put themselves or dug themselves too big a hole. But I had a coach that used to tell me all the time, the only place you ever start on top is when you're digging a hole. So maybe they can get out of it.
Well, yep. I mean, there's no doubt about the fact that it is unlikely. Mark, thanks, man. Great stuff today.
All right. Be good.
All right. There he is. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise Mayo. Game day be delicious.
So much goodness in there.
That was a lot, man. Yeah. I mean, he went
strong
after.
Words about Debo.
And strong words about the Niners' chances.
Yeah, well, the Niners' chances are non-existent, but and I did like what he said.
Non-existent, well, but not good.
I like what he said at the very end is you're never further on top than when you're digging a hole.
Yep.
In other words, as you start digging the hole, you get further down in the ground. So, yeah, they're digging out. They've dug themselves a hole, but a win here, and it keeps hope alive, so
yep,
to speak.
Yep, no doubt. And you know, the Debo thing, to me, that's actually why it matters. This isn't going to affect the game on Thursday night. I don't think it's necessarily going to affect Debo, and I don't think at the highest of levels, you know, Kyle Shanahan, the organization, it's an annoyance. But as I said yesterday, not a big deal, but a deal. But Mark just told it to you. This stuff matters to teammates, and Debo has already smacked a teammate in the head already this year too. I mean, I'm with him, man. Why do so many of the wide receivers always have to take it here? Why?
Yeah.
Why? Especially when there are guys like Juwan Jennings who seem to be just completely the opposite. We're sponsored by the California Lottery. You can weigh in on any of this. We promised what Shanahan said about Debo. We'll have that in a little bit. But also coming up next, it is time to unveil a healthy bunch of Warriors rumors that started to percolate this week and especially this morning. So we'll have that for you next. This is Willard and Dibs. How would you feel if you won a football game and then the next day a teammate is on Twitter saying, I'm doing fine, I'm just not getting the ball? How would you react to that as a teammate?
It'd irritate me and it pissed me off. By the way, you lead the team in drops.
Now, back to Will and Dibby on 95.7 The Game.
I mean, real talk.
Yeah.
Like, this stuff happens, man. Like, I know that what gets me about it is you'll see stuff like this, and it is it's tucked into this cesspool of junk known as Twitter, that so many of us are either forced to be a part of, or just whatever. It's become a part of what we're all doing and checking things out. And I do think social media has actually a lot to offer. I also think it's a complete danger zone.
Yeah.
So all at the same time, but tucked into that, when that happens, I feel like a lot of people go, oh, man, this is an emotional sport and an emotional guy, and a lot of people are coming at him. So, you know, it's not a big deal. Stop making it a big deal. And I'm like, that's what players think. So it is a big deal. It is a big deal. Deebo Samuel this year, I think we could have a healthy conversation about this question. Stop trying to figure out if he's lost a step or if the play calls are right. Just answer this question. Has Deebo been a good teammate this year?
I don't think so. I mean, he seemed to be a little bit mad. He seemed to be angry at the long snapper over a missed field goal. He came at his kicker, and the long snapper got in between the kicker and Deebo, and then he kind of choke pushed him away.
Remember, Kyle Shanahan said Deebo or said Tabor overreacted.
Right.
Tabor overreacted, not Deebo.
Right, which, I mean, I take that for almost nothing because you're not going to, you know, you're not going to go at your highly paid receiver. You're going to throw your long snapper under the bus, and maybe Tabor did overreact. I don't know what was said. We can't really read lips in that moment, but has Deebo been a good teammate? I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. I'm not in the locker room, neither are you, so it's hard to really say that, but I look at what Deebo has done and now what he's tweeted and things he said openly doesn't really seem like he's been there for his team.
Do you know what's tough about this? Some of this for me is organic. Deebo Samuel, when he plays, is one of those guys who, when he breaks out into the open or when he breaks a tackle, there's extra juice. A lot of people can break a tackle. But I'd argue, for example, when Christian McCaffrey breaks a tackle, you're like, wow, that guy's really good at football. When Deebo Samuel breaks a tackle, the stadium gets inspired. He's a boombox boy. He is homegrown. We've been watching him do it for a long time. We know in our memory bank that there was a season he seemingly saved by himself. He has been a heart and soul type of a character on this football team. It just feels different when things are going well for him. So when they're not, it's not surprising that a lot of those things are what suffers, like the heart, the soul, the inspiration, that energy that goes through the fan base when something good happens. It's just it's missing right now. But I think to what you just said, you're not in the locker room, I'm not in the locker room, we're not teammates, we're not 49ers. So I don't know what they think. I don't know what they feel about this situation. But Deebo is starting to move into the second half of his career, and he's developing a podcast. This is in the media a lot more, a lot more. You know, Debo's not someone who used to enjoy that. And now he's in the media a lot more. Although, when he's by his locker being talked to by the media, he sort of has that look in his eye, like he's looking at people like, will you go away, please, right now, and I'm going to give you a one-word answer. So I don't know, man. I don't know what all the teammates think and feel about Deebo. What Brock just said is that's one of my best friends on the team. I don't know. I don't know if he's bothering his teammates or not.
I'm sure it's bothering them that they have to answer questions about it, answer questions about Debo's tweets. And I know that Deebo talked today before practice at his locker. Cam Inman has a story on the Mercury News website, and Deebo admits that he's a little frustrated. He's frustrated right now, and I'm sure he's frustrated that they're 6-7, and he's also frustrated that he's not getting the ball. And it's interesting what you said about Deebo when he breaks tackles. It's because he plays with such a great amount of violence when he has the football. When he gets the ball, he's looking to not avoid tacklers. He's looking to hurt tacklers. He's looking to run through people and run over people, not run around people. McCaffrey, when he breaks a tackle, it's fun to watch because as he gets to the point of contact, he gets really small. He shrinks his body really tight, and he's able to shake off the effort, and then he kind of widens out again, and boom, the burst, and he's gone. Deebo gets it, and he runs with those, I don't want to say weird, choppy steps, but the way he runs, it's a little bit of like a shuffle. It's a choppy. It's really quick steps, and he runs with such aggressiveness, and he's got that really big trunk, and he's a thick football player, you know? And so when he goes to get contact, it's fun to watch because defenders get punished. And this year you haven't really seen that from Debo.
Here's Kyle Shanahan on Debo's tweets and getting him the ball.
And Debo and I talk every day, so, I mean, I understand Debo saying that. Debo wants to help us out, and the only way he helps us out is getting the ball more, and we'd like to get it to him more, and we'll continue to work at that.
Kyle was asked if they would like Debo to keep those thoughts in the building instead of on social media.
Yeah, we'd always love things to stay in-house. That's probably why I don't mess with social media. I'm sure I'd get worked up and stuff, too, if I was reading stuff about myself all the time, and I'd maybe make a tweet or something. Is it a distraction in our building? No. I mean, we've got to answer questions about it. It's the first time I've talked about it is right here. But, I mean, Debo and I see each other every day and talk about stuff every day. So my advice is to not let outside frustrate you because just answering those things isn't going to help you in any way. Usually only hurt you. But as far as, like, what we deal with in our relationships and our team, it's water under the bridge.
So no big deal, says Kyle, but yes. It'd be better to not do that. It's interesting the way he answered it, though. He's not saying it'd be better to not do that because it's bad for the team. It sounded to me like he's saying it'd be better to not do that, Debo, because it's bad for you.
Yeah, and it's also bad for the team. And he did say that up front. Like, you know, we'd like to always keep that stuff in-house and stuff, and that's what every good team would prefer. But in this day and age of social media and players having their platform, and especially Debo, who is now branching out and, you know, getting on a bunch of podcasts and doing his own thing, he's going to speak his mind. He should. He's allowed to. But when you do something like this, you send out a couple of tweets and then you delete it, it's just going to open yourself up to a certain amount of criticism.
Yeah, but you know what? With all that said, man, you said something interesting a couple minutes ago when you're like, he's admitted that he's frustrated. And this is always the way I've looked at it, and I'm not perfect when it comes to this at all, but how you react when you're frustrated, dude, that says everything. That says everything. That's the hard stuff in life. How do you react when you're frustrated? We've all been there. We've all fumbled in that situation. We all try to learn to be better. That's what ends up happening most of the time. That's why he deleted his tweet. He spent some time breathing and then went back and went, you know what, this isn't worth it. I'm taking this thing down because the comments probably weren't good. And Kyle's right. It only makes it worse when you react to emotion with emotion and all of that. But to me, we got to stop doing the whole like, well, they're frustrated. Well, how you react when you're frustrated is on you. It's on you.
One of the few things you can control.
It's like
is your own emotions, your own feelings, your own reactions.
And I'm not going to be hypocritical to not feel some type of way about Debo right now when I said everything that I said all summer about Brandon. Brandon let all of this get to him. And it was an awful offseason. It was awful. And it starts like this. It's subtle. It starts like this. But where's this going next? What if we get to Christmas and the Niners are eliminated and somebody writes an article on NBC Sports Bay Area or in the Merc about how Debo is probably going to get cut after June 1st? Now what? Now how are you taking the field against the Lions, Debo? Are you moving to the back of the line to make a statement?
Well, those conversations have already begun. The talk about, you know, Debo, and I heard it this morning on the roast about, you know,
about him getting cut?
About Debo.
Well, they've been going since before the draft.
Right, but even with the restructure, you know, you look at this team going forward and you've got Pearsall and Ayuk and you've got Debo and Juwan and, okay, Cowing, sure.
He's on the team. No, but it's a truckload of money in the wide receiver
room. And it's a lot of people, and yes. You also have young, inexperienced people in the room, and then you've got Brandon making a bundle, and Debo making a bundle, and Debo coming up on being 30. I think he'll be 30 next year. He'll be 29 in January.
Yeah, exactly.
29 in January, so, you know, next year will be the year in which he turns 30, so these are realities of all football players, and Debo hasn't scored a touchdown for the 49ers since October 10th.
That's
so
crazy.
When he says to Cam Inman, that's 2 months ago today, Cam had the quote, he speaks on his deleted tweet, quote, a little frustrated for sure. So, yeah, I get that. Your team's not winning, and you're not getting the targets you think you should get, and you haven't scored in 2 months. I can see where you're frustrated.
Yeah, but do you respond to that by making everybody else frustrated? And I'm not saying that he's necessarily done that, but again, we want you to hear this. Mark Schlereth, offensive lineman, and those guys are cut from a certain cloth. Offensive linemen, because of the position they play, they do not want to hear people talk about me after you win. They just don't. They don't. You know, who came to Jalen Hurts' defense yesterday with A.J. Brown going out? Wasn't an offensive lineman, but it's linemen. Linemen, they're in the trenches getting hit on every play, and they do not want to celebrate wins by seeing teammates on social media going, yeah, but what about me? They don't like it. And listen to Schlereth when we asked him about Debo's tweets.
It irritates me and pissed me off. By the way, you lead the team in drops. So, mister, I'm getting along fine. Like, the thing Debo's a phenomenal football player. And you became who you are because of your versatility. Because they could line you up in the backfield. I truly believe that Debo Samuel could line up in the backfield and rush for 1,200 yards as a running back. So they ran you at the running back position. They used you in the jet sweeps, the orbit sweeps. They used you in the screen game, the bubble screen game, the rip and tear screen game. They used you, you know, in a myriad of different ways, the deep overs and everything else. You're built like a fullback. Like, you're an incredible football player, and your versatility has made you a superstar and got you paid millions upon millions of dollars. But that's not good enough, right? Because, what, I'm not being paid as much as Brandon Ayuk, or I want to be an X receiver. I want to be something I'm not. I want to be a real boy. You know, I mean, at some point, accept who the hell you are and be grateful for what they've done in creating a superstar. I don't understand, like, why it's not good enough to be who you are. And what they've done for you is created a, you know, generational wealth. And like, you've worked hard. I get it. I mean, you're a great player, but you're not Justin Jefferson running the X. You know, you're not that guy. So I don't understand where the disconnect comes from. I don't understand the, you know, disappointment. I don't understand. And it always comes from the wide receiver position. Like, at what point did we make these guys so valuable? They're so self-consumed, because it's always one of these guys, it feels like. I mean, in Philadelphia, it's A.J. Brown. Like, at what point did we overvalue them to the point where they feel like they're above the team? I don't understand. You should make him line up one-on-one and play guard for a whole practice and get a mouthful of Rydell every play and start to understand what other guys have to do for you to even sniff a football. Because it bothers me. And that's one of the things about Kyle Shanahan that I know this to be true. Understanding other people's issues and problems. Like, he is so big on that from a coaching standpoint, coach to coach, player to player. You need to understand what other guys have to go through, that other guys have to sacrifice so that you can have some success. And then we're going to pout because we only got three balls thrown to us. We only had two receptions for 22 yards. We've got, what, one TD on the season? So now we're in pouting mode, right? And not that we won a game, that we handled them offensively and being excited for George Kittle and the day he had. And, like, we can't be excited. We got to pout about the lack of production we had. And that amount of selfishness, honestly, it just irritates the piss out of me.
I mean, Schlereth, obviously, that's pretty strong. And I look at it, and we said it yesterday. It's not a big deal, but it's a deal. Here would be what I would say to Debo if he were sitting here. What did this do for you? That's my only question. It's not, you didn't take everybody down. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. What did this do for you? What did this do for you to go to Twitter and tell everybody you're actually still every bit as good as you used to be, but you're not getting the ball, and you do that after a double-digit, like, three-touchdown win? What does this do for you?
What do you think he would say to that? I mean, it's just him speaking his truth.
Yep.
I'm just getting my message out,
I actually think he would say, look, I'm feeling frustrated, and in that moment, I chose to respond. But I would also argue that he would admit right now that once he sat down and thought about it and watched what it did, it didn't do anything for it. And I can prove it because he took it down.
Exactly. Exactly. So your frustration, and you go out there and you tweet, and does that make you feel better? It might make you feel better in the moment, but as you reflect on it, you're still in the same situation. You still aren't getting the ball as much as you want. You still only have one touchdown. You still only have 40 catches on the year. So even though you are frustrated, and maybe that's a way to alleviate some of the frustration, it's a short-term fix.
How about Richard and Gilroy? Hey, Richard, thanks for calling. 888-957-9570. How do you feel about Debo as a teammate this year? Richard, what's going on?
Hey, how you guys doing? So I just wanted to add to or piggyback on your comment, you know, is that I think these athletes at this level kind of dismiss or miss the a key word at this level of play, and that's professionalism. Trying or having the ability to act like a professional at this level of play is being missed. And I blame maybe social media, maybe this generation with the amount of entitlement these kids feel that they are kind of, entitled to. And I kind of feel like the fact that he deleted the tweet is unacceptable as a professional and needs to take accountability for that. Maybe in plain words, man, I think he's just acting like a big crybaby. That's all I got to say, guys. Thanks.
Richard, thanks for the call. Actually, as far as accountability, as far as what he might say about it, he was asked too. Here's Debo at his locker today to expand about the tweet that he sent.
Do you care to expand on your feelings or what you wanted to convey with that?
I mean, you read what you read. Sure.
I missed the second part. You read what you read?
No one knows what the second part is.
And the second part is.
Can you play it again?
Yeah, sure.
See if I can catch it.
Do you care to expand on your feelings or what you wanted to convey with that?
I mean, you read what you read. Sure.
Something for sure. For sure.
That's what I heard.
It ends you read what you read.
For sure. You read what you read.
Well, and then he said, I'm a little frustrated, for sure.
No, I think
that's what Cam Inman had reported that he said.
No, I think he said, you read what you read, and meat should be cooked medium rare, for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's what he said.
Yeah, based on what Cam had tweeted, I think that's the part where he said, I'm a little frustrated, for sure. That's what Cam had reported that he said.
Super easy follow-up question to you read what you read. Why'd you take it down then?
And how do you know what I read? I mean,
well, because that's what he wrote.
Right. You read what you read. Well, I mean, what does that mean? Like, why are you frustrated?
It means he's standing on it.
He didn't really stand on it because you took it down. That's not standing on it.
I said that's the easy follow-up question.
Right.
Stand on it. Yeah.
Stand on what you say. Stand on what you do.
And then why'd you take it down?
Well, it's funny that you talk about stand on it playing Draymond Green because I'm just looking at the Draymond Green podcast and he's saying how he blacked out during the night celebration to Rudy Gobert.
I'm sure.
Draymond's saying that he blacked out. So Draymond's not really standing on it.
Stand on it.
Yeah, unless he truly did black out, which I don't believe.
No, but I understand what, if you want to accuse him of exaggerating, I think that it was an incredible emotional release.
Sure.
Is what it means.
Like yeah, and I didn't see the full clip, but I just saw the headline of I blacked out during the night ceremony. So we can all talk about stand on it. And if you tweet something and then you delete it, you're not standing on it. And yes, he's a little frustrated, but if I'm the head coach, I would much rather have him come to me and say, Kyle, I would like it if you could design more plays where I'm the primary. Because I mentioned this to you before, you watched the Bears game, and there aren't a lot of plays that were designed where he was the primary.
I still think you and I see this differently as far as what Debo was responding to or what made him send that. This is part of the problem. It's just like getting a text message. You can't see the tone behind it. You don't know the tone behind, will you meet me here at 4? Will you meet me here at 4? Hey, would you meet me here at 4? You don't know that when it's words. So I see why you read that. I'm not getting the ball. And you think he's shooting at Purdy and Shanahan. I personally think he's shooting at fans and media. I think that Debo did that because his feelings are hurt, not because his numbers are hurt.
But fans can't get him the ball. So
no, they can't, but he wasn't like, to me.
Well, again, his response, if that's the case, was misguided.
Well, my read is, remember what the first part of the tweet is. I'm playing just fine. Like, in other words, he's responding to people who are all saying that he's lost a step.
Right.
That's what I think. I could be wrong, but that's how I read it.
Yeah, I read it to say that he's not getting the ball, and the people who can get him the ball are the coach and the quarterback.
888-957-9570. We have a new cleaned up version of Debo.
Okay.
Here we go.
Care to expand on your feelings or what you wanted to convey with that?
I mean, you read what you read. A little frustrated for sure.
Yeah, you win. A little. Yeah. But only a little. A little frustrated for sure.
Right. A little frustrated for sure. I mean, he didn't throw a helmet. He didn't run over and bark at the head coach like we've seen Travis Kelce do with Andy Reid when he did put hands on him.
Yep.
And, you know, you've seen many a wide receiver come off the field and demonstrably throw the arms up and throw the helmet down and make a big scene out of it. He just went to Twitter and tweeted a couple of things and deleted it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think anybody is pitching this as a big deal, but it is not. I'm with Schlereth. It's not the right thing to do in this situation. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. 888-957-9570. That's the number. Doc Pandia joins. Coming up next, we get an update on all of the injuries, both Niners and Warriors. Greenlaw, Bosa, Trent, Garendo, Wiggins, Curry. We're getting into all of that coming up next. Plus, we'll start taking your phone calls on all of the Warrior trade rumors that are out there. Which one is the deal for you? Which one would you do? We'll take calls on that coming up. Willard and Dibs.